We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Back here for one more hour on Sports Talk, WWLAMFM.com, and the Odyssey app. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside Charlie Long. Steve Geller is hanging out in Florida, probably sitting on a beach, sipping a Mai Tai right now, having a great time, I hope. But Charlie, so we got another final in from the first day of Super Regionals. We already had Duke take down Virginia, and TCU has officially taken down Indiana State 4-1. Oral Roberts and Oregon are in the top of the first right now. It's not been a good day for the seeds.
Yeah, for the top 16 teams. And once again, we kind of mentioned earlier about the whole Indiana State situation with how they're not hosting despite TCU being a 2 seed and them being a top 16 seed because of the Indiana Special Olympics being held on their campus. So they're not going to be able to do it. TCU is now hosting in Fort Worth despite being the lower seed. Unfortunate for them, they lost game 1 4-1. And then, of course, as you mentioned just earlier, that Virginia Duke game. Duke ended up winning that game 5-4, very competitive game. And now we have Oregon and Oral Roberts going on right now. Jeff, I don't know about you, but I'd really like to see Oral Roberts make a run to Omaha. I think the last 4 seed to make it there. Shoot, I mean, I'm trying to remember. Was it Fresno State in 2008?
That's a good question.
I'm gonna do a little bit of research.
Yeah, you're gonna have to tell me.
Yeah, right.
Did you say South Carolina, Florida is in a rain delay?
Yes, and it's actually going to be cutting out in about 20 minutes. I think I was just reading that it was going to be finishing and getting back underway at 7:30 Central Time.
That's 2 seeded teams. You got 15 South Carolina against number 2 Florida.
Yeah, LSU, one of the three top 16 matchups that we have this weekend.
Yeah, LSU and Kentucky are kicking off tomorrow. That's another seed on seed. Kentucky is the 12 seed. LSU is the 5. That's 2 p.m. on ESPN. Tennessee, Southern Miss going off at the same time. You have Virginia, Duke, game 2, Alabama, Wake Forest, and Texas, Stanford coming at you tomorrow. Going to be a busy day. But, Charlie, we're going to get into more Saints this hour. I teased a conversation earlier about which team should have won a ring. The conversation was kind of around the 2018 Saints or the 2011 Saints. I think people are misconstruing the question with which makes you more angry that they didn't win a ring. And I don't think that's what the answer should be. It's which team should have won a ring. And I think that 2011 offense was one of the best offenses in NFL history. You had peak Breeze,
oh, yeah.
Peak Graham. I mean, the Giants team that won the Super Bowl that year, they beat, I think, 49-24 earlier that season.
Silly me, Jeff. Real quick, Stony Brook was the last 4 seed to make it to Omaha.
Stony Brook,
in 2012.
There you go.
Beat LSU on the way over.
Like I said, every time we say Stony Brook, LSU fans will groan.
My bad.
But yeah, so you had a couple, I think you had a couple entrants onto that list of which team should have won a ring.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess we'll step out of football for a second. The 2019 Houston Astros were the best team in baseball by far.
Best. They've won so many, though.
They've won 2. But
has that only been 2?
Yeah, but their best team was in 2017.
Were they cheating back then?
2019. So they had Gerrit Cole. They had Justin Verlander. They had Charlie Morton. They had Lance McCullers. They had
Keuchel?
No, Keuchel was past his prime at that. I think he actually might have still been on the team.
I think he was.
Maybe, but he was past his prime at that point. His best years were like
earlier on. Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa,
George Springer. They had a monster team. They were the best team. That was, in my opinion, that was the best team in Astros history.
Do you think that was the team that drove them to cheat, or did they cheat before that?
They cheated before that. But that was the best team in Astros history.
Post-cheating.
It's kind of funny because they lost to in 2021, they lost to the Atlanta Braves in the World Series. I mean, they've been there four times in the last, 6 years, so it's pretty incredible. But the one team that will haunt my nightmares is that 2019 Astros team, because in a best of seven World Series against the Washington Nationals that were a wild card team, every single game in that series was won by the road team. The Astros had home field advantage. They didn't win a single game at Minute Maid Park. They won all three in Washington, and they came so close in Game 7 they couldn't get it done. So that Washington Nationals team was like a team of destiny, so to speak. They had like Juan Soto and like Trey Turner and Steven Strasburg, Max Scherzer, all these names. But that Astros team should have won a World Series that year. Gerrit Cole was the best pitcher in the world in 2019. They had the horses to get it done. They just couldn't get it over the hump. So that, in my opinion, as an Astros fan, that was the one team, because you know you might look at 2021, right, and how they lost to the Braves in that World Series. That one doesn't really bother me as much because they had injuries that they were dealing with in that series. They were healthy in 2019. They really should have won that World Series, and they just couldn't get it done.
You know, a team that this isn't a homer pick, but one team that really should have won, and like I'm sure their home fans remember it, is that Panthers team. And what was it, 2015?
2015, yep.
They won 15-1, mm-hmm. And then they lost to a Broncos team that didn't have a quarterback. I mean, Peyton Manning was the quarterback. He rode the bus. I mean, he did nothing in that Super Bowl. He was a shell of himself. That was his second Super Bowl. Von Miller won it for him.
So I guess then I'll ask you this, and I guess we'll also get Ross Jackson's take on it as well. With the Saints, do you think the 2011 team deserved to rank more than the 2018 team did?
I mean, I don't know what deserved, but...
Well, that's like the question, right? Which team deserved a ring, right? Like, do you think Drew Brees in his peak with MVP's level year?
Here's the reason I don't think 2018 is... First of all, that pass interference call, if they had made it, which they obviously should have, I'm not arguing that, but people talk about that call as if the game was over if that call gets made. It wasn't. There was a minute 41 left. The Rams had a timeout. There's a reasonable argument to be made that game goes to overtime. Greg Zuerlein made that from 58 easily. You think Sean Payton is suddenly going to run that ball three times? Because that's the only way to keep it down about 20 seconds, right?
You might even take Neal's at
I think
that point.
No. He's throwing it. He's trying to end the game. I guarantee you they throw that ball at least once. So if they throw the ball once...
So if you have one timeout, let's put this into perspective.
Yeah, minute
40 left, you can stop the clock once, right?
Yes.
So you run... Let's say you hypothetically take you use that timeout to stop it right there. So you're still at a minute 40. But then if you take two more knees...
Yeah, minute 35.
Okay, minute 35, let's say that then. So you're at then 55 seconds left.
Yeah.
And then you take another knee, you're at 15 seconds. And then you have to run the play to kick a field goal, right? Yeah. So at that point, it's 10 seconds left. Zuerlein nailed it from like 58 yards, but you don't have a timeout to stop the clock.
But here's the thing. I guarantee you, Sean Payton's not running the ball three times. He's thrown it at least once. So they're trying to end that game right there on their own terms.
I think in that scenario, you'd be stupid to throw it. Like
he would have done it. He would have done it. Guarantee it. And so, I mean, just put it in that perspective, right? So you throw it once, it's incomplete, you run the ball twice, you kick the field goal. If that happens, the Rams would get the ball back about 40 seconds left, and all they have to do is get into field goal range. Zuerlein's making that from 65 that
game. Well, yeah, but in the hypothetical situation that you literally just sit on the ball, you take a knee, you don't even run a play.
They wouldn't have done it.
I think they would have. I think it would have made more sense because you literally have 10 seconds left.
It might have made more sense, but my point is
that
the game wasn't over there. It wouldn't have ended the game. People like to say like that would have ended the game. It wouldn't have ended the game. The Saints got the ball in overtime. They didn't score. That team was in shambles at that point. Everyone was hurt. Drew Brees was 40. They would not have beaten the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Either way.
They would have put up a better fight than the Rams did. That was the worst Super Bowl of all time.
I agree with that. But you know, the Rams didn't deserve to be there either. But my point is that team was not at its peak at that point in the season. That Saints team should have been. I mean, they should have won that game. That was a freak game. Alex Smith running quarterback keepers for 40 yards. They couldn't stop
Vernon
Davis.
So you lean 2011 versus 2018?
I've said that I'm more disappointed than the 2017 team. I think that team was hot at the right time.
Mm.
And I think they had the best chance because they would have gotten the Eagles, who won.
Do you have any other like Celtics years or something? I know you're a Celtics fan that you think that they should have won it and they just couldn't get it over the hump.
I mean, they should have won it last year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're up 2-1 on the Warriors. If they don't go seven games in two consecutive series that didn't have to go seven games, I think they win that series. You should say the Patriots, but as someone who grew up rooting for the Giants, I'm never going to say the Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
2012.
There you go. No, that's a good one. The undefeated Patriots
16
team.
18-1
just
Patriots.
Fell one game short of
that's
the perfect
still
season.
The funniest storyline in sports.
That's a good
remember.
One. That's a good pick, that Patriots. There have been, you know, it's kind of funny because when you look at it, the best teams in each individual sport rarely win. Like the 73-9 Warriors team that lost the NBA Finals, the best regular season of all time in basketball, they fall short. The 2001
example.
Seattle Mariners, they won 116 games. They don't even make it to the World Series that year. And then the Boston Bruins this year.
Yeah,
this year's
Bruins,
Boston
yeah.
Bruins. They win the most games and have the most points of any hockey team of all time, and they don't get out of the first round.
I think that 72-win Warriors team, you know, it's another good example of like they win that, but it's the Thunder going up 3-1 and blowing it. They didn't have enough energy by the end. Like, they could see it just went down.
So,
just like the Celtics last year.
Between those three teams and then the, once again, 18-0 Patriots that just fell one game short in the Super Bowl.
Gotta win all.
It's every single team that has, like, the best regular season of all time can't get it done in the postseason. Yeah. It's a really interesting
dynamic. Almost as if you should rest
dynamic.
The regular season.
Yeah.
But, the fans pay money to go watch the games. Anyway. We're going to be coming back. We got Ross Jackson, host of Locked On Saints and senior writer for the Saints News Network. Honestly, I don't even have an agenda. We're just going to kind of talk about the Saints. So if you have any questions for Ross, you want to get in any subjects, give us a text in the Open Air Julius Talking text line, 504-260-1870. We're getting down to it. Myself, Jeff Nowak, and Charlie Long taking you up till 8 p.m. on WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And we're back here on Sports Talk. Bringing you up till 8 p.m. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside Charlie Long, and we are going to go to the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We've got Ross Jackson on the line, host of Locked On Saints and senior reporter for the Saints News Network. I've said that like 3 times. I've got it wrong every time but that one. And that time I had to explain why I got it wrong, so I still got it right. Anyway, how you doing, Ross?
Hey, buddy, you did great, man. Glad to be here with you, man. Thanks
practicing.
For having me on. Y'all.
Usually, by the fourth hour of this show, I've gotten to the point where everyone stopped listening, but I'm on
warmed
point,
up.
So yeah. It only takes about 3 hours.
Gotten that rhythm, right?
Yeah. So we've spent the last three weeks out at, and let's say it together, organized team activities.
Oh,
I know that's
gosh.
Been an issue for
practice.
You, Ross.
Practice.
Yeah, it's practice. We can just say practice. But so, you know, why don't you just hit me with, you know, some of the takeaways that you had. Anyone stand out to you in particular that you've seen at these three practices? And we're going to pretend we know everything about everything after watching, you know, what, 90 minutes combined of Saints practice. But what were some of the takeaways that you had after these past 3 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, clearly this is a Super Bowl team. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, the big highlight, of course, is Derek Carr, right? Derek Carr, I think, did a great job of commanding the offense, getting in and out of the huddle, doing those things that you would expect the quarterback to be able to do. But also you see the extracurriculars going on to where, you know, he and Chris Olave miss on a pass in the third week of OTAs. And Chris Olave already knows, all right, pick up the ball, bring it back to Derek. We're running it again. We're going to get it right. And then they work on it to get the timing right. So it's like little things like that, that kind of precision, that type of accountability and all, which goes back to his, you know, introductory press conference where he highlighted that, you know, accountability across the team is something he feels that is his responsibility, though, you know, he's not interested in stepping on the toes of some of the other leaders are already there. So, you know, the quarterback, Derek Carr, that's kind of the big highlight there. Elsewise, on the offensive side, it's great to see just sort of this collection of skilled position players. You know, guys, we were, we're now 2 years removed from covering, you know, a Tre'Quan Smith and Lil Jordan Humphrey led wide receiver room, you know.
Don't forget Marquise.
And Marquez Callaway, of course. And so, you know, you go from that to now they've got these guys that are, you know, you've got Michael Thomas, of course, hopefully, you know, being able to stay healthy and coming back. He's certainly driven and committed to getting there. Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, who had these great rookie seasons that are looking to kind of have these breakout, you know, continuation their second seasons, avoid the sophomore slump and go with the sophomore bump instead. But then you look at the other pass catchers that they've gotten, guys like Juwan Johnson and Foster Moreau. So that's the other thing that's a real standout, is just how much this offense has kind of been restructured in such a way that you can see that they have the weapons, and that's without even talking about the backfield of it all. And then the defensive side of this team is its identity still very much feels that way. It's still the loudest unit, you know, every practice, trash talk, all that other stuff. DeMario Davis, Cam Jordan, Tyrann Mathieu, Marshawn Lattimore, fantastic leaders. And so, you know, you can still see this team, you know, finding its groove over on the defensive side and all. And so those are kind of my big key, kind of three takeaways there.
I guess my first question for you, Ross, is about Juwan Johnson. The Saints obviously extending him in the offseason. They're kind of giving their vote of confidence to him as taking another, like, he already kind of took the next step, so to speak, this past season. He had a really good year, but giving him that vote of confidence that they expect him to take another step this year with Derek Carr, who's notoriously loved using tight ends. Just look at his connection with Darren Waller with the Raiders a few years back. So I want to get your thoughts on him, because from what I've been hearing from OTAs is that Juwan Johnson's also been looking really good so far with Carr.
Yeah, he's looked outstanding, and you're seeing it in a bunch of different ways. I mean, obviously, it's hard to evaluate run blocking during OTAs when no one's really trying to tackle anybody. It's just about, you know, am I in the right place? Am I following my responsibilities? Do I understand the play call? Am I reading correctly? It's all of those, the kind of above the shoulders football part of it all. But, you know, I think when you look at him as a pass catcher, I mean, it's natural for him. You know, he's a big guy that can do big guy things, but he can do more than that. I mean, he might have been the Saints' best yards after catch pass catcher last season, you know, and so you really like what he brings to you in terms of, you know, every level of the offense. He just keeps getting bigger and bigger every time that we see him in like the best way possible. And, you know, so, you know, he's going to be able to kind of come in and be that strong guy that can fight through the contact, fight through, you know, fight through these linebackers, fight through these safeties, be bigger and faster than those guys and all. And so, you know, you like what you've seen from him so far, but I think, you know, the thing to really look at him in is, you know, the Saints now have him and Foster Moreau, who they can utilize out of these sort of these two tight end sets that they really like. And a two tight end set usually to a defense tells you that that's maybe a little bit more run happy, a little bit more of a rush approach. But the ability to be able to disguise and throw out of that now with these two guys and Juwan Johnson and Foster Moreau is huge for this New Orleans Saints offense, especially, as you mentioned, with a quarterback like Derek Carr, who's very comfortable throwing to those tight end spots, hitting the seams, things like that. So I think there's a lot of sort of that. You know, look, the Saints have struggled to find a reliable and consistent tight end since Jimmy Graham. They've tried the Kobe Fleeners of the world, the Michael Omanawanubis. They've gone with Benjamin Watson twice. They tried, you know, Jared Cook for a little
Kobe
while.
Kobe Fleener, like, you remember that name?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they've tried all these guys, and now all of a sudden you're in a situation to where they could have four quintessential pass catchers at tight end, and Juwan Johnson, Foster Moreau, Lucas Kroll, if he continues to make his development and show what he can do as a blocker, and now Jesse James, who they've added. Like, any of these guys can be good players for this team, and that's without even getting to the Taysom Hill of it all, who would also be in that room. And so I think, you know, you look at Juwan Johnson as the leader in the facility at tight end, but really that whole room has taken a complete 180 from where it was in recent years.
I appreciate that, like, 2 or 3 years ago, I can't even remember, you learned how to pronounce Omanawanui, and you just can't help throwing it out there. It's like, I got this.
It's like, you know, you go to school and you learn, you know, algebra and all these other things. And I have no way to showcase that, but Michael Omanawanui, yep. I will get into a conversation if I can.
Oh, yeah. It's why I type out Passanio whenever I get the opportunity. You know, so you mentioned Derek Carr earlier, and, you know, he's been sharp in practice, and I think that that's something that anyone can see. He's learning a new offense, but he's clearly picking it up. One of the things that I saw today was Pro Football Focus ranked him as their number 14 quarterback behind guys like Kirk Cousins. And, you know, I look at Derek Carr, and you see how long he was with the Raiders and was very, like, a beloved guy in that organization. And I'm sure you've noticed this. You host the podcast as well. And, you know, I've had so many Raiders fans showing up and listening to the podcast and saying, wow, I'm a Saints fan now because I love Derek Carr so much. And it's kind of odd when you look at it and you're like, well, why is this the case? But then you see how he operates, and you see how he leads a room, and you see how he leads a practice, and you see how he leads a press conference, and you're sitting in there and you ask a the stupid question, and he'll talk for 5 minutes, and it's like you're the only one in the room. And you can really understand why there's that sentiment around Derek Carr. And I mean, it's very Breeze-like. That's the only way I can describe it. And, you know, he just commands that space in a way that is very rare. And you kind of have to sit there and it's like, well, why hasn't he won more games? And I'm just curious, what would you say in that regard? Like, would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, like, Derek Carr is one of those guys that has, you know, a long future beyond football.
Yep.
Because he's going to have every opportunity available to him. If he wants to go into media is going to be available to him. If he wants to go into, you know, philanthropy and everything, like, all that's going to be there for him. And this is a guy that is very, very strongly attached to his faith. He goes and he'll lead, you know, sermons and in conversation at different churches and religious institutions and stuff like that. Like, he's a born and bred leader, this guy. And so you put him in a room and give him the opportunity to lead, and, you know, his only option is that he's going to go out and do that. And I think he does a great job of all that. And I think that there's a lot of folks that might even put, you know, I hear that, you know, Pro Football Focus puts him at 14, and I think, oh, okay, that's a little bit higher than maybe a lot of national pundits might feel about him, because they look back at the past couple of years and the 14 interceptions and all these other things, and they go, oh, well, that's clearly Derek Carr's fault.
Yep.
But when you look back at Derek Carr's career, I mean, first of all, working with Josh McDaniels, who doesn't have a Tom Brady to make his offense work and doesn't have a Bill Belichick to stop him from making bad decisions, we've seen what that looks like in the NFL already, and it's repeating again over in Las Vegas. So I put a lot of what was wrong with the Raiders, you know, last year in particular, especially with the weapons that they had, on the head coach more than I do on Derek Carr's ability to be able to execute. Because I refuse to believe that, you know, Derek Carr just forgot how to play football all of a sudden. You know what I mean? There's a lot of other equations that. And one of the other pieces to that equation is, this is a guy that's never had a defense that is ranked better than 20th in the NFL. And all of a sudden, he's going to be equipped with a defense that has ranked consistently in the top 10 since, what, 2017, or at least around that area. You know what I mean? They've been in that conversation, and they've certainly been in the, you know, in certain areas of their offense, they've been top 5, top 10 over the course of the past 3 years. And so I think that that makes a little bit of a difference for him as well. He's one of the better in-game quarterbacks in the NFL. I believe he's fourth right now amongst active players when it comes to fourth quarter comebacks, as well as game-winning drives, either third or fourth. I can't remember how the Tom Brady retirement impacted it. But, you know, he's got a lot of these pieces that the Saints love and that they really, really value at the position. Work ethic, leadership, poise, the ability to, you know, the pre-snap ability that he has. These are all things that the Saints care very much about, and it's made him a very natural fit here so far in New Orleans.
I think that's kind of the excitement with the team, Ross, is that when you're pairing this guy with, as you said, his first potential top 10 defense that he's ever had in his going on 10-year career, right?
Like,
he's been in he's been in the NFL for almost a decade at this point, and he's never had an even competent defense, much less like an average one. So you're pairing him with that, but all the weapons that they have, the biggest question mark, I think, for a lot of fans, and for Mike Dettelier is pointing this out multiple times, is the offensive line. Because you've invested so much into it with 4 first-round picks, a second-round pick. That's so much premium draft capital that you've put into those starting 5 on the line. And you haven't seen much out of them. A lot of it is due to injuries, and it is a very highly injured position. But, I mean, you haven't even really seen those guys at OTAs either. So mandatory minicamp is coming up. But at OTAs, you were seeing guys like Calvin Throckmorton, Lewis Kidd. Like, I think Eric McCoy was, like, the only starter there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts on the team's offensive line? Because I feel like that's the one thing, big question mark on the team heading into 2023.
Yeah, a huge question that this team has to answer is, can they protect the assets that they have, or rather, can they protect the big asset, the quarterback, who can elevate the other assets and distribute to the other assets that they have either added or reinvested in, like guys like Juwan Johnson and Michael Thomas in the reinvested category there. And so, the thing that really, you know, hurts about all this is that the Saints really can't even start to answer that question until training camp. Like, mandatory minicamp's not really going to answer those questions, maybe a little bit for Ryan Ramczyk, but, you know, is Andrew Speed going to be healthy enough to even participate if he's there? Trevor Penning, Cesar Ruiz, those guys are not on a timetable that, you know, says that they're going to be ready to go for minicamp. They're on a timetable that says they're going to be ready to go for training camp, or that hope or expectation is that. Now, we also didn't expect to see Michael Thomas, you know, 4 days ago, but we did. And so there's always, you know, something like that can happen, but that they might not really be able to start even getting to the point where they can gather the information that will eventually answer the question of their offensive line until July. And that could be, you know, a little bit tough for them. But the good news is that, you know, one of the things that made this thing so special back in, if we look at like the 2000 2017, 18, 19 years, is that even when they were down offensive linemen, the backup offensive linemen were still able to go in there and perform. And so I think the Saints are getting a good look at their depth right now without having, you know, four of their five starters out on the field. And, you know, there was a moment, you know, to where there was the backup center in during team drills and everyone moved but the center. No way to say anything other than, okay, well, that one's on the center, you know? And so there's, you know, it's indicative and it's easily diagnosable to be able to say, okay, here's a position where I think that the position group that I think the Saints can continue to invest in over the course of training camp. And I think that offensive line deserves more attention and will very likely get more attention all throughout those, you know, few weeks of training camp, because that's a big question they're going to have to answer, not just the starters, but are they equipped to cover for the starters should one or two miss a game?
Yeah, I think the first team offensive line during the last day of team drills, and probably all of them, if we're being honest, was Storm Norton at left tackle, Calvin Throckmorton, mm-hmm. Eric McCoy, who did show up, Lewis Kidd, yeah. and Landon Young. So it's tough to draw a lot of conclusions from that group,
but
they're getting important reps. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. We do have a text here that wants to know what is your take on the draft picks? What have you seen from this so far? Obviously, there's limited amount we can get from the linemen and, you know, the Brian Brzees of the world, the Isaiah Foskeys of the world. They work out across the field. It's hard to even see what they're doing. But has there been any of the rookies that have stood out to you in particular so far?
Yeah, I think the one that has stood out to me the most, outside of the guy that gets to have the ball in his hands the most, in Jake Haener, but, you know, looking away from the quarterback spot, is Jordan Howden, the safety that they drafted the fifth round out of the University of Minnesota. This is a guy that had over 200 slot snaps in four of the last 5 years when he was in Minnesota. He's got a ton of special teams experience. He's versatile over on the defensive side. And the comparisons that I've heard of him are that, you know, he's got the versatility of PJ Williams and he has the above-the-shoulders football IQ of a Marcus Williams, who saw the field extremely well. I know a lot of people probably just groaned and went, yeah, well, Marcus Williams missed a tackle. I know he missed a tackle. But in terms of the way that he saw the field, moved himself into the position to make plays, like Marcus Williams was able to get himself into plays that he had no business being able to get to in the first place. And so there were some reps that he lost that most safeties wouldn't even be there to have a chance. And it's that kind of IQ that's being described about Jordan Howden. So I think that Jordan Howden's probably the guy that has been the most impressive to me out of what we've been able to see from all of the young rookies. Brian Brzee has done a good job. You know, he started off in the third team, climbed to the second team, got up to the first team. But how much of that was really just that by the time that he got to the first team, they were doing red zone drills. They wanted to get an opportunity to look at him situationally or circumstantially in that versus how much of it is his progress. I think some of it is still the latter one way or another, but that question can't really be answered until training camp. So you're right. The linemen are a little bit harder, especially because like no one's trying to tackle. No one's really trying to stop the running back. No one's really trying to sack the quarterback, all those things. So maybe that's where, you know, things like, the joint practices and stuff, especially having 2 weeks of those, maybe that's where we really start to get to diagnose a little bit of that. But I think Jordan Howden has really been the guy that is the rookie that has stood out in positive ways the most for me so far out of this class.
I think Jordan's an interesting case, Ross, because he was a guy that played a lot of special teams at Minnesota. So when you you make that pick, like that's kind of your first thought is that this is a guy that can help you on special teams almost instantly. But, I mean, is there a world, I mean, I guess, where when you look at the Saints safety position with Tyrann Mathieu and Marcus May, they're not getting any younger. Do you think that, I mean, far from him just being, let's say, the next JT Gray, so to speak, a special teams ace on the team, that he can actually have impact early on in his career in the defensive backfield as a safety?
Yeah, I mean, I purposefully draw the connection of him to PJ Williams because PJ Williams was that guy. Like, he didn't start for the, you know, especially when things started to really come together for the Saints defense back in 2017, he wasn't really a starter. Like he was a guy out there that, you know, they kind of put in the slot and he revitalized his career there, but then they, you know, had some injuries at safety. And so then, you know, he goes into I can't remember if it was a Titans game or a Panthers game toward the end of a year, but then they put him at free safety and he plays well. I think it was a Titans game and he plays extremely well out there. And then he revitalized his career as a safety. And then all of a sudden he becomes this chess piece that you can move around. I think Jordan Howden has that same ability, especially with the Saints not bringing PJ Williams back. Now, look, he's got some competition because there are guys like Lonnie Johnson Jr., Ugo Amadi, as well as the other safety and Jonathan Abrams. So this trio of safeties that the Saints signed this offseason all have a lot of versatility to them too. But Jordan Howden's a guy that has a ton of experience playing split safety roles where his responsibility is taking away one half of the field or a quarter of the field, depending upon what the coverage is. He's got experience being a single high safety to where he's the lone man center fielder. He sealed a game for the Minnesota Golden Gophers that way, which is still the most fun mascot to say on air, by the way, outside of like banana slugs, they don't have a football team. And then you've got, you know, this guy that also has a ton of experience in the slot. And not only are Tyrann Mathieu and Marcus May not getting any younger, but neither is Bradley Roby, right? So you have to figure out sort of what your plan is. Starters, this is a team that had five intended defensive backs to start the season last year, and then the five of them never played a single snap together. So having a guy like Jordan Howden that, yeah, can help you out on special teams, but that also has the versatility to be a chess piece to move around, I think there is a good chance that he has a bit of an earlier impact that is expected.
We're talking to Ross Jackson, host of Locked On Saints and senior reporter for the Saints News Network. I have one more question for you, Ross, and we were kind of debating it earlier today. We got a bunch of interesting texts. Do you want to see the Saints on Hard Knocks?
Oh, man, I do.
You do?
It's so bad. Like, okay. D.A. is going to be so mad at me for saying that. But, like, I really do. I think Hard Knocks is – I'm still one of those people that's such a fan of Hard Knocks, and I do think that it's a fun way for fans to get a little bit more, access to their favorite team and stuff like that. I do think that there's value to it, but I understand that it's a distraction. But I will say this, I don't think that they will, because remember, they're competing against probably what is the most intriguing storyline in the NFL this year, and it's the whole Aaron Rodgers to the New York Jets situation.
Right.
I don't know how HBO passes up on that. They would be wild to do so, but I also would not be upset, you know, seeing the Saints on Hard Knocks and, you know, I like me some camera time too. Maybe I walk across the camera, get to say I see myself on HBO. Like, I'm not mad at that either. So, you know, there's some selfish reasons there, but I'm not fully against it, but I do understand the distraction that it causes for the team and coaches.
If you got to get on HBO somehow, it's not the worst way.
Yeah, I'd rather it be this way than any other alternatives that might come across. I'll tell you that much.
All right, Russell, I appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend, man.
Thanks, buddy. Right back at you. Y'all take care, stay safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Thanks, Ross.
All right, man, make sure to check out Ross and Locked On Saints daily podcast covering the New Orleans Saints. He does a great job. And we'll be right back here on WWL. I'm Jeff Nowak, along with Charlie Long. Back here on WWL, getting down towards the end, Charlie Long and myself, Jeff Nowak, taking you up to 8 o'clock. And I've been meaning to bring this up to you all day, Charlie. This is kind of a bizarre story that came out yesterday. Malika Andrews reported on NBA Today. Jamal Murray says that when he was a kid, his dad would have him do pain tolerance drills.
I did hear about this. Wasn't it the whole thing with like how he had like a floor burn on his hand?
Well, he had a floor burn, and that's how the conversation came up. And he
right.
was talking about his pain tolerance. It was nasty. If you see the picture of that floor
picture
burn,
is nasty.
He basically like just took the skin off his palm, and he had his hand wrapped during this interview. But he says that his dad would have him do squats while having cups of hot tea balancing on his thighs for pain tolerance drills. And and that wasn't even the only thing. It's like, I'm not an expert on child rearing, don't get me wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's child abuse.
Yeah, sounds bad, Laura. sounds like it.
Like, he just brought it up like, no, yeah, this is
oh
normal.
Yeah, I did it. No,
like, jeez.
Yeah. No, I did see that on Twitter. It was making the rounds. It's definitely an odd story, but
I mean, why do you have to teach your kids pain tolerance? That's just weird.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, that's not a good look. If you're a sports parent and you're giving your kid pain tolerance drills, I think that's a problem. I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, no, I don't think that there's really any other take, honestly, than like that's just kind of strange.
Well, Malika Andrews shared a clip, and you can see her face like when he says, you're like,
Yeah, it like kind of recoils a little bit. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, game four is underway. Let's see. I had the score up here. The Heat and Nuggets. Nuggets up 9-7 early on. Oral Roberts just nuked a ball
off
Oregon's pitcher. 4-0 in that series. Another home team.
Yeah, four seed that's trying to make it to home. As we said, the first four seed since
Stony Brook
in 2012. Yeah. Oral Roberts is trying to become the first four seed to make the College World Series.
Why not Oral?
We'll see.
I have to say.
We'll see.
All right. We're coming back. One more segment here on WWL. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Charlie Long. Stick around. Coming back in here on Sports Talk, closing things out. We got a Texas. I don't think this pain tolerance technique is a good idea, but maybe we're wrong. His kid did go to the NBA. Dad must have been doing something right. No, I don't think I'm wrong on this.
I think it's still kind of strange.
But if you are still listening this late into the show, it must mean you like what you hear. So if you do, check out Inside Black and Gold. It's a podcast I host with Steve Geller. Twice a week, we talk Saints, we talk OTAs, we talk Minicamp, we talk training camp, we talk everything. We're always there, so we're always talking about it. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts on the free Odyssey app as well. Hit me up on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. If you have any questions, you want anything covered on the podcast, yeah, that's it. That's my free promo for myself. I think I earned it after 3 hours and 58 minutes. But Charlie, you doing anything fun this weekend? What are you up to?
Watching college baseball, my guy.
Oh, that's right.
We got Oral Roberts now up 5-0 over Oregon on a wild pitch. I mean, this is as good of a start as any Oral Roberts fan could have hoped in through 3 innings. And then the other game that's going on right now with South Carolina and Florida that was delayed due to weather, a lot of runs scored so far, 2-2 in the first. So, you know, the ball's flying out over there. But yeah, I'm rooting for Oral Roberts to be that first 4 seed since Stony Brook to make it to the College World Series. I think that'd be a really cool story.
I do too. But all right, glad you joined Charlie Long and me, Jeff Nowak, for Sports Talk. Keep it locked on WWL all weekend long for the LSU-Kentucky Baseball Super Regional. Coming up next, the latest news followed by CBS Sports. Go Tigers! Stay safe, y'all. Have a great weekend.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.